This Marketplace podcast is supported by Ascensus, helping people dream bigger, aim higher, and save more with financial confidence. Unleash the power of your retirement savings plan with innovative technology that makes things easy, top-notch service from experts who care, and flexible solutions that can grow with you. For more than 40 years, Ascensus has been helping savers achieve their goals. We can help you achieve yours, too. Learn more at Ascensus.com. That's ASCENSUS.com.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico. More than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Call them high-yield bonds or junk bonds, their king gets a presidential pardon. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. First off, tomorrow marks 4 weeks since Chinese officials locked down the city of Wuhan and the rest of the province of Hubei to contain this coronavirus. China says new infections are falling, suggesting the containment strategy might be working. The World Health Organization says it's too early to say if that is a trend. China's a vast country, and outside Hubei province, people struggle to get on with their business. Marketplace's China correspondent Jennifer Pack reports.
Every few minutes on the local radio, citizens are asked to stop the spread of the new coronavirus. Avoid parties, malls, the cinema, and karaoke bars, says this public service announcement. And people like Rebecca Huang got the message. She stays at home in the eastern port city of Qingdao just to be safe.
The incubation period for this virus is long. A person not far from here was infected, but only showed symptoms 2 weeks later.
And because you just don't know who might be sick, school teacher Jane Ma in northern Liaoning province is avoiding contact, even with couriers.
I don't do as much online shopping now.
The fear of contracting the virus led Zhang Liying in Shanghai to cancel a planned vacation to Europe.
On an overseas trip, I would easily spend up to $3,000.
Still, people are spending on travel, back to the cities for work from their hometowns after the Lunar New Year holiday. Josie Fan paid nearly three times more to fly rather than take the train from southwest Yunnan province to Beijing.
Because the traveling time by plane is a lot shorter than train.
And that might limit her chances of catching the virus, she says. Spending more time at home means people stock up on food, like YY, a freelancer in marketing.
I bought a lot of snacks, beer, wine, and instant noodles.
Residents of the epicenter of the virus outbreak, Wuhan City, have also bought medical supplies. People like Tian Changxing. He says he bought face masks, goggles, and even vitamin C. That came to a few hundred dollars, a fraction of what his family would normally spend over the Lunar New Year holiday. Shoe business consultant James Gao spent less, too. He didn't have any social gatherings during the break, which has one tiny upside, he says. No overeating, which is healthier.
Personally, it's a healthier year.
Gao also had extra family time, something he says that's priceless. In Shanghai, I'm Jennifer Pack for Marketplace.
The BBC is reporting that demand is surging for private jets to get people in and out of China, given all the canceled commercial schedules. Demand is one thing, but supply is another. If a pilot and crew fly into China, they want to quarantine themselves for 2 weeks afterwards to be sure they don't get sick, meaning two unproductive weeks after each run, so pilots and crew are in short supply. New data from Zillow show the rate of African-American home ownership climbed 3.4% in the last half of 2019. But black home ownership still hasn't closed the gap. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab tells us why.
Before the housing bubble burst, black home ownership rose to historic highs. Jeff Tucker, an economist at Zillow, says many of those owners were first-time buyers. So when the bubble burst,
a lot of folks were pushed back out of home ownership, and then they struggled to get back into it.
Because their credit scores never recovered. The rate of black home ownership hit a 50-year low in early 2019. A year later, things have evened back out. But Tucker says,
that's almost 50 years in which there was really no kind of net progress made in terms of raising homeownership rates for Black families in America.
Elena McCargo of the Urban Institute says some structural barriers continue to persist.
Access to credit, what capital and financing is flowing into different neighborhoods at different levels. It's very difficult in this current environment, especially as credit continues to be tighter.
Zillow says the top three cities with the biggest gap between Black and non-Black homeowners are Minneapolis, Pittsburgh, and Milwaukee. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Checking financial markets, the FTSE index in London is up 0.7%. Here, Dow and S&P futures are up slightly, 0.2%.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Ascensus, helping people dream bigger, aim higher, and save more with financial confidence. Unleash the power of your retirement savings plan with innovative technology that makes things easy, top-notch service from experts who care, and flexible solutions that can grow with you. For more than 40 years, Ascensus has been helping savers achieve their goals. We can help you achieve yours, too. Learn more at Ascensus.com. That's ASCENSUS.com.
Traditional revenue sources for public media, and really the media at large, are declining this year. And we at Marketplace are not immune to these trends. We're currently tracking behind target for this budget year. We are tightening up expenses, but the need for trusted, grounded, fact-based reporting is as pressing as ever. We can't cut back on our mission, so we are turning to listeners like you. Please step up now and invest in Marketplace. If you haven't yet given, now is the time. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
Among those pardoned, or Heather, sentences commuted by President Trump yesterday, one of the pardons goes to Michael Milken, a high-flying Wall Streeter who was convicted of securities fraud. Milken made his name in junk bonds. Marketplace's Justin Ho joins us here. Milken was known as the junk bond king. He was an innovator, and junk bonds are everywhere now. Remind us about what the problem was.
Yeah, so junk bonds are a huge slice of the corporate bond market. Different companies have different risks for default, and so the riskier companies issue bonds that pay a lot more in interest. If you don't like the word junk, just go with high yield.
So back in the 80s, Michael Milken was the king of them.
Yes. So back then, Milken went all over the country selling these things to investors. And investors liked them because they paid so much in interest, and risky companies liked them because bonds helped the companies raise cash. You know, this is fine until this blew up. Big buyout firms would sell bonds with the help of Milken's company, Wall Street powerhouse Drexel Burnham Lambert, and the buyout firms would use the cash to take over companies.
Yeah, remember Drexel Burnham Lambert, but Milken did not go to jail for junk bonds.
Right. It wasn't the junk bonds that were illegal. We could go get a junk bond today. But big bond corporate takeovers fueled by junk bonds were getting so huge that a lot of money stood to be made or lost. There's another name that's important here, a trader named Ivan Boesky. He got caught up in a big insider trading scandal and became a government informant. So investigators ended up charging several people with securities law violations in 87, and Michael Milken was one of them. He ended up serving 2 years in prison.
Ever since, Milken has been known for his work in philanthropy, but also policy. The Milken Institute now, which he underwrote, has become a big name.
Yeah, this is a nonprofit based in LA that he founded in 1991. It puts out a lot of research on big topics like global growth and regional issues like urban development. And they're perhaps best known for an annual business-focused conference that's gathered names like former IMF director Christine Lagarde.
All right. Marketplace's Justin Ho, thank you. Tech is seen as a new frontier for labor unions. There is news today that workers at Brooklyn-based Kickstarter have voted 46-37 to join the Office and Professional Employees International Union. Kickstarter is a company that lets you raise money online for creative projects or causes. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work. while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.